Chapter 53. Hetty Delange was in a turmoil. It had started with the phone call that had roused Johnny from their bed. He had said something about trouble at the shaft as he pulled on his clothes, but she had only come briefly awake and then drifted off again as Johnny hurried out into the night. He had come in hours later and sat on the edge of the bed, his hands clasped between his knees and his head bowed. "What's wrong, man?" she had snapped at him. "Come to bed, don't just sit there." "Davy's dead." His voice had been listless. There was a moment's shock that had convulsed the muscles of her belly and brought her fully awake. Then, immediately, she had felt a swift, cleansing rush of relief. He was dead. It was as easy as that. All day she had worried. She had been stupid to let it happen. Just that moment of weakness, that self-indulgent slip, and she had been dreading the consequences all that day. She had imagined Davy trailing after her with puppy eyes, trying to touch her, making it so obvious that even Johnny would see it. She had enjoyed it, but just the once was enough. She wanted no repeat performance and certainly no complications to follow the original deed. Now, it was all taken care of. He was dead. "Are you sure?" she had asked anxiously, and Johnny heard the tone as concern. "I saw him." Johnny had shuddered and wiped the back of his hand across his mouth. "Gee, that's terrible." Hetty had remembered her role and sat up to put her arms about Johnny. "That's terrible for you." She had not slept again that night. Somehow the thought of Davy going directly from her to his violent death was exciting. It was like in the movies, or a book, or something. Like he was an airman, and he had been shot down, and she was his girl. Perhaps she was pregnant, and all alone in the world, and she would have to go to Buckingham Palace to get his medal for him, and the Queen would say... The fantasies had played out in her mind until the dawn, with Johnny tossing and muttering beside her. She woke him when it was first light in the room. "How was he?" she asked softly. "What did he look like, Johnny?" Johnny shuddered again, and then he started to tell her. His voice was husky, and the sentences broken and disconnected. When he stumbled into silence, Hetty found herself trembling with excitement. "How terrible!" she kept repeating. "Oh, how awful!" And she pressed against him. After a while, Johnny made love to her, and for Hetty, it was better than she had ever known it to be. All that morning there were phone calls, and four of her friends came over to drink coffee with her. A reporter and photographer from the Johannesburg Star called and asked questions. Hetty was the centre of attraction, and again she repeated the story with all its grisly details. After lunch, Johnny came home with a little dark-haired man in a charcoal suit and black Italian shoes, with a matching black briefcase. "Hetty, this is Mr. Bowart. He was David's lawyer. He's got something to tell you." "Mrs. Delange, may I convey to you my sincere condolences in the tragic bereavement you and your husband have suffered?" "Yes, it's terrible, isn't it?" Hetty was apprehensive. Had Davy told this lawyer about them? Had this man come to make trouble? "Your brother-in-law made a will, of which I am the executor. Your brother-in-law was a wealthy man. His estate is in excess of 50,000 rand. But paused portentously. "And you and your husband are the sole beneficiaries." Hetty looked dubiously from Boat to Johnny.
"I don't... what's that mean, beneficiary?"
"It means that you and your husband share the estate between you.
I get half of 50,000 rand?" Hetty asked in delighted disbelief.
"That's right."
"Gee," exulted Hetty, "that's fabulous."
She could hardly wait for Johnny and the lawyer to go before she phoned her friends again. All four of them returned to drink more coffee, to thrill again, and to envy Hetty the glamour and excitement of it.
25,000! They kept repeating the sum with relish.
"Hell, man, he must really have liked you a lot, Hetty," one of the girls commented with heavy emphasis.
And Hetty lowered her eyes and contrived to look bereft and mysterious. Johnny came home after 6, unsteady on his feet and reeking of liquor. Reluctantly, Hetty's four friends left to rejoin their waiting families. And almost immediately after that, a big white sports car pulled up in the driveway. And Hetty's day of triumph was complete. Not one of her friends had ever had the general manager of the Sonderditch Gold Mining Company call at their home. She had the front door open the instant the doorbell rang. Her greeting had been shamelessly plagiarized from a period movie that had recently played at the local cinema.
"Mr. Ironsides, how good of you to come!"
When she led Rod through into the over-furnished lounge, Johnny looked up, but did not get to his feet.
"Hello, Johnny," said Rod. "I have come to tell you that I'm sorry about Davy, and to..."
"Don't give me that bull dust, Tin Ribs," said Johnny Delange.
"Johnny," gasped Hetty, "you can't talk to Mr. Ironsides like that."
And she turned to Rod, laying a hand on his sleeve. "He doesn't mean it, Mr. Ironside. He has been drinking."
"Get out of here," said Johnny. "Get into the bloody kitchen where you belong."
"Johnny!"
"Get out!"
roared Johnny, rising from his chair, and Hetty fled from the room. Johnny lurched across to the chrome and glass liquor cabinet that filled one corner. He sloshed whiskey into two glasses and handed one to Rod.
"Godspeed to my brother," he said.
"To David Delange, one of the best rockhounds on the Kitchenerville field," said Rod, and tossed the drink back in one gulp.
"The best,"
Johnny corrected him, and emptied his own glass. He gasped at the sting of the whiskey, and then leaned forward to speak into Rod's face.
"You've come to find out if I'm game to finish your bloody drive for you, or if I'm going to quit. Davy didn't mean nothing to you, and I don't mean nothing to you. Only one thing worrying you. You want to know about your bloody drive."
Johnny refilled his glass.
"Well, hear this, friend, and hear it well. Johnny Delange, don't quit. That drive ate my brother, but I'll beat the bastard, so you've got nothing to worry about. You go home and get a good night's sleep, 'cause Johnny Delange will be on shift and breaking rock tomorrow morning, first thing."